live from the CG Technology Studio.
Did he get him? Oh, he tackled. I thought he missed him.
He did miss him.
In the entertainment capital of the world.
It isn't. The runner goes halfway. No. Somebody thought it was on. His Torres had to scoop it and doesn't get it. And Ty Wiggerton, he bumped him and he's gone.
It's the T.C. Martin Show.
And Wiggerton is furious.
Diagnosis.
The 3-2 pitch.
Prognosis.
Outside ball, four, call it strike three.
Osmosis.
Ball strike three. I didn't think that Marty Foster was going to ring it up, and he did.
It's the doctor, T.C. Martin.
No, goodness gracious.
No, no, no. You got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me.
The doctor is now in.
Get your money's worth.
It's the T.C. Martin Show coming away live on a Tuesday. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. The back end of T.C. Martin's little short summer siesta break, as it coincided with the WNBA All-Star Game that went down over the weekend up in Minneapolis. Of course, TC, the voice of our Las Vegas Aces here, and had a few days off. Spent some time up in Northern California. I saw some pictures he's posted up on social media. He got a chance to go check out the Giants game in San Francisco up at AT&T Park. And also bounced around a little bit to Sacramento and some of his old jaunts. Magnum, that he got a chance to check out there.
Yeah, and he had dinner, tacos it looked like, with a former Major League Baseball Manager of the Year, I think multiple time Major League Baseball Manager of the Year, and he's going to bring back some vegetables from that guy's garden. And I can only tell you this, I had a clementine last year from the garden, and it was incredible. So Dusty Baker has more skills than just managing baseball. He also has a green thumb as well.
I did see that picture, and it was looking so healthy with all those veggies,
man,
colors
yeah.
everywhere.
I was impressed. It almost looked like a V8 commercial with all the vegetables that were on that table. And I'm like, TC doesn't eat vegetables. Bill Cartwright always gets on him because he doesn't eat anything green. So I wonder if Cartwright saw that picture. I got to tell him next time he's on. Be like, Bill, guess what? TC brought home some zucchini. They brought some cucumbers and tomatoes home from Dusty Baker's garden.
Bill Cartwright, he's an old school kind of guy. I don't know how much he's, you know, surfing around Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, but I'm sure he'll eventually get around to seeing those pics.
No, Bill Cartwright is the guy who watches a lot of black and white television. And we talk about that. The Rifleman, the Munsters.
Westerns all over the place
Bill
Cartwright.
He's a big fan of Westerns. I mean, you would never think that the guy who was partying at Studio 54 would be a big fan of Gunsmoke and Bonanza and shows like that. But yeah, he's a big Westerns guy.
It's the T.C. Martin Show. Come your way. I'm Chris Wynn, along with Chris Magnum Chapman, filling in for T.C. The doctor will be back tomorrow, but we're very pumped because live in studio right now, we have a close friend of the show. She does tremendous with her Coach McCartan podcast all over the place. Also, does a tremendous job filling in also on the Superstation, WFAN in New York. Danielle McCartan live here in studio. Danielle, good to see you.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. Hey, a little bit of action going on. It's mid-July, but when it comes to sports news and activity, you got all kinds of stuff to talk about. And right now, I'm flanked by Jersey folks.
Yes,
okay,
that's
in
right.
The studio, and there's no shortage of topics to hit on regarding whether it's the Jets, the Giants, of course, Carmelo Anthony, longtime New York Knick, possibility about where he could end up, and obviously the big news of today from a Vegas standpoint and a gaming standpoint, where you have the first ever NBA/WNBA sponsor being a gaming company. So we've got a lot to hit on today.
We definitely represent the Garden State very well.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
You know, she's from North Jersey. I'm from South Jersey or Central Jersey, and
Central Jersey doesn't exist.
See, this is what people from North Jersey say. Look, South Jersey, you are either you're a Philadelphia person, right? Like if you're from South right. Jersey, Atlantic City,
Cherry Hill,
Cape May, Cherry Hill,
Phillies.
You are all about the Philadelphia Phillies, yeah. right? You love the Phillies. Mm-hmm. You go to Philly games.
Eagles.
You go to the Eagle games. Mm-hmm. If you're from where Danielle's from, you're either Jets, Giants, Yankees, Mets, Devils, Islanders. Not really Islanders, Rangers.
No, Rangers, yeah.
Where I'm from, there's a mix, right? Because I know a lot of people who are big Eagle fans and hate the Giants.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people who like the Phillies and don't like the Mets or Yankees. Me, I'm a Jets fan and a Mets fan, but I'm also a 76ers fan. And because I'm from New Jersey, I grew up rooting for the Devils. I don't know how anyone from New Jersey could not root for the Devils. That's your hometown team.
They stink. That's why. It's easy.
They've won three Stanley Cups, right? Three Stanley Cups in the last 25 years.
They haven't been good since they moved to the new arena.
No.
Right, basically.
No. But it's comical because, you know, my family that I grew up with, my dad, uncle, they were Ranger fans because the Devils didn't exist when they were young. So I get that. But people my age, it's like, look, the Rangers have won one Stanley Cup since Pearl Harbor was bombed. That's it. That's it. They've won one. The Devils have won three in 25 years. I think we know who the better franchise is.
And there's a lot of millennials and younger fans in the New York area that weren't even born yet when the last time the Rangers won that.
Yeah, 1994.
That Stanley Cup.
I remember Stefan
Matone. You can understand.
Stefan Matone. Funny thing is, his kid is a member of the Golden Knights.
Really?
Yeah. And he was Stefan Matone scored that goal in double overtime to help the Rangers advance to the Stanley Cup, where they eventually beat the Vancouver Canucks in seven games. But Stefan Matone, his son, was drafted in the first round by the New Jersey Devils. He's now a member of the Golden Knights. He played a lot in Chicago last year, but he actually did get called up to play here in Vegas a couple times last year for some injury replacements. But and that's weird that he would end up as a member of the Devils, and his father broke their heart in 1994.
So Danielle, she rolled in, Mags, with the old school logo of the Jets on her shirt right here.
That's
this is from the Ken O'Brien era, right?
Yeah,
that logo right there.
No. That's the Joe Namath logo. The Ken O'Brien logo. The okay. J had like a long
tail, like a
jet plane. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's like the
Namath era.
Yeah, the best logo that they had though was a logo that was it said Jets. But it had like a really crappy airplane on the helmet. They only wore it for like one or two seasons.
Oh, yeah, with the gray face mask, I think.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But I can remember, because we had season tickets growing up for the Jets, and I would always want to go to the games that they had like the special uniforms. And I can remember one year they wore green helmets with the Joe Namath logo and black face masks. They only did it for one game, but they wore the dark green jerseys with black outline. And I don't know what the occasion was that they wore it. I think they were commemorating the 69 Super Bowl championship team, but it was kind of weird that it wasn't that far removed. Like, when I was a kid going to Jet games, they were closer to that Super Bowl than they are now that I'm an adult. And it's like, they've you know, I was a kid, and it was only 15 years. Now we're looking at almost 50 years.
One of the biggest droughts of championship droughts in all of sports.
Don't remind me. Right? Well, I really thought 98 was their year. And then they lost to the Broncos in the AFC title game. They were up 10-0 at halftime.
I cried in that game, you know.
I was devastated because that was the year. Vinny Testaverde. And then you get all excited. You're like, look, Elway retired. The Jets are by far and away the best team in the American, in the AFC. First quarter of the first game, Vinny Testaverde tears his Achilles tendon. And then Bill Parcells made one of, I think, the biggest coaching blunders of his career. And he put in the very incompetent Rick Meyer, who was an awful, awful player in the NFL. Terrible draft pick. He never, what was he, like the third overall pick. He was garbage. He made the mistake of cutting Glenn Foley, and then he made the mistake of not playing Ray Lucas right away. And Ray Lucas rallied the team. I think they won like 8 of their last 10 games or something crazy like that, and they missed the playoffs by one game. But if Parcells doesn't play Rick Meyer for those 3-4 games, maybe the Jets. And the funny thing about the Vinny Testaverde game was when Tom Tupa had to come in and play quarterback because of the emergency quarterback rule.
He's the punter, right?
He was the punter, yeah. And he had to play quarterback for a quarter.
Hey, full disclosure here. Tom Tupa was a quarterback in college at Ohio State, as well as the punter. So
I think it was
he just happened to be a good punter, so
he
made the NFL as a punter.
Oh no, he played quarterback for the Cardinals, I think. When Joe Bugel was coaching the Cardinals, I think Tom Tupa was Joe Bugel.
Was it mop up duty or something?
No, I think he was a starter.
A blowout?
No, I think it was a starter. I think he started a couple games as a quarterback. And I remember when he converted to a punter, and I'm like, Tom Tupa?
Yeah, he's a punter in college, too, I thought. I thought he could punt it at Ohio State,
well, Randall
too.
Cunningham, Randall Cunningham, much better quarterback than Tom Tupa. Mm-hmm. So should be in the Hall of Fame, by the way.
We have Daniel McCartan here live in studio. Follow her at Coach McCartan on Twitter, all things sports when it comes to the tri-state area. So we got to get into it. We're talking about right now the Jets and the situation. Look, It's going to make news, right, Danielle, when you have two of the top three picks in the NFL draft are in the number one media market in the country.
Yeah.
I think people are going to have a focus on these guys when they're coming into camp. Exactly the case. And the timing seems oddly perfect to have you in studio here along with Mags.
That this morning.
Given that Sam Darnold signs his deal and, quality deal, by the way, for a rookie. As he's in camp yesterday. You had all of his teammates with the golf claps when he came out of the field during training camp and stuff. But it makes it for a lot of Jet fans are anticipating big things from this kid out of USC. Right now on the depth chart, I believe he's listed as third. Todd Bowles talked about veteran quarterback Josh McCown is going to be number one. Teddy Bridgewater, number two. But we all know that things can be pretty fluid when it comes to quarterbacks and the depth chart once these guys start playing preseason games.
See, now the Jets have a new quarterback controversy. Every year it's something. Yeah. They never have capable guys. Now they have seemingly three capable guys. And, you know, he just reported yesterday 4 years, $30.25 million or something like that. Ridiculous numbers for a guy who hadn't even stepped on the field yet. But every day at Jets camp, the reports are that the people were chanting, "We want Sam, we want Sam." So I predicted that there would be a takeover by Sam Darnold in maybe week three or four. I think he's going to be the week one starter.
Wow. That's,
I do.
That's big. I disagree. I think if he plays at all this year, it's a very bad thing for the Jets.
He plays at all.
I don't want to see him play until next season.
Why?
Because I don't know. The team isn't going to be very good. They're a 6-7 win team, I think, without him. I don't think he's ready to play on a team that's not built to win right now. I want to see him come in and play when they are built to win, maybe next year. Because let's be honest, when Tom Brady steps down, whenever that is, there's going to be a big void in that division, and I think the Jets want to prime themselves to be the team to kind of take the torch. And let's be real, you and I mean, we're not too far different in age, but in our lifetimes, we've dealt with Dan Marino,
and we've dealt with the Dolphins
and Jim Kelly, for a brief period, Peyton Manning, only like two or three seasons, and then Tom Brady. It's the Jets' turn to take over that division, but I think Teddy Bridgewater will be the guy who takes over by week three or four, because I think Bridgewater's a better quarterback than McNown, and I think that he has something to prove. I love the kid at Louisville. I think he was a great college quarterback. He was doing pretty well in Minnesota, and then he suffered that ungodly injury.
Did you see that video?
I refuse to watch it, because I remember there was a gruesome injury. I think it was Tom Waddle playing at Veterans Stadium when he was with the Bears. And I just remember him going up to make a catch at the vet, and his cleats got stuck into the turf, and his kneecaps ended up in his thighs. I saw that on TV, and I said, you know what? And I remember the Napoleon McCallum injury, and of course the Kevin Ware kid from Louisville on the basketball court. I don't like to see gruesome injuries. I watched the Joe Theismann injury only because we've had Joe on a few times.
And that's just brutal, too, see that.
After like one or two times, like I decided I'm not going to watch it anymore because I like Joe and I don't want to see that. But
Another one too, Mags, that I didn't like, that I was just, it was awful, was the Willis McGahee injury.
Oh, yeah, at Miami when he was in the national title game. Oh, that was bad. But getting back to the Jets, I do think that Bridgewater is going to take over the starting role. I think he's going to be a stopgap until next season.
I don't know, because the people get what they want in New York.
They do. That's true.
They're already cheering for Sam. They wanted Sam Darnold 2 years ago. Like, they had people wearing USC number 14 jerseys at MetLife Stadium.
They also wanted Mark Sanchez.
He was good, though, but he was good while he had Eric Mangini's team.
Yes.
When John Idzik came in and started changing it, when he had guys like Lavernius Coles behind him, and he took them to the AFC Championship
twice,
back-to-back years.
And it's not his fault that they lost either of those games.
Correct. So Mark Sanchez, although he gets a bad rap, although he ate a hot dog on the sidelines, you know, he wasn't that bad. And if you put him in the good system that he was in for those 2 years, AFC Championship game, that was almost a Super Bowl those 2 years.
I agree with you totally on Mark Sanchez, because I'm one of those people who says Mark got a really bum deal. Because if you look at the team that was around him, they were a good team.
Jericho Cotchery, Lavernius Coles were his receivers.
The defense was ridiculous, right? You had John Abraham anchoring the defense, right? Bart Scott. But
Revis in his prime, wasn't it?
Darrell Revis in his prime. But the biggest mistake was when, like you said, when John Idzik came in and started getting rid of all those guys, The biggest thing they did was they got rid of all of his weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And no quarterback in the NFL, outside of maybe Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, are going to win consistently without good players around them. And
a system. The thing is, any personnel you put into Bill Belichick's system, any person that you put in succeeds. It's the system that has been
inside. I totally
agree. Tom Brady, of course, he's one of the best quarterbacks who ever played in my Jets t-shirt.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just think, I mean, I agree. I think Sam Darnold should have to wait a year. I just don't think he will, because when you look at the receiving corps now, it's like Robbie Anderson, who was undrafted, who I don't really like.
No, well, he's got some issues off the field.
Yeah. I mean, who else does he have? There's no other weapons for him.
Yeah.
I mean, Curse, yeah, he's good. But he's old. I mean, I did
a whole article about it.
He's
not a spring chicken, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. I don't know. But I think there's going to be a change. I mean, and McCown wants to retire and be a quarterbacks coach anyway. So this is like on-the-job training for him.
Kind of like Mark Brunell was. Mark Brunell was a pretty good mentor to Mark Sanchez,
mm-hmm.
guy who'd been through the fire multiple times in the NFL.
Yeah.
But I think that the Jets, I think they're maybe a year or two away from being a team that people are talking about again. And I liked Rex Ryan.
Me too.
I was one of those people who really thought Rex Ryan, again, got a bum deal. Because
it's the media. It's the fans that
do that. Well, as soon as the media turns on a guy in New York, it's not like here or L.A., right, where the media runs guys out of town.
Ben
New
McAdoo?
York, Philadelphia, well, he was a buffoon. I mean, he had it coming. But, I mean, I can remember when they ran Ray Hanley out of town. I mean, and he was a terrible coach for the Giants, but nobody was going to succeed taking over for Parcells, who, of course, and won a couple Super Bowls there. But, you know, the media in New York is brutal. And I mean, I can remember, because I grew up there. I'd listen to local sports talk. I'd read the guys in the paper. You know, Mike Lupica.
Mm-hmm.
He was the big one. I listened to you know, when I was a kid, there was only WFAN.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Mike and the Mad Dog. Before Mike and the Mad Dog came on, it was Imus in the Morning.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Imus, of course, not sports. He was political.
Yep.
But
yep.
New York is a tough place, and the media in New York, I think, can make or break a guy. And, you know, they turn very quickly on Mark Sanchez,
mm-hmm.
and they turn very quickly on Rex Ryan. And the media and the fans ran John Idzik out of town after 2 years, and he deserved it. He was a terrible, terrible general manager.
The billboards that the people were buying by MetLife Stadium, people mm-hmm. bought billboards that said "Fire Idzik."
That's passion.
They flew planes over MetLife Stadium during the tailgates that said something like "Still looking for a quarterback since 1969." Like, that's how the guy was run out of town.
Yeah.
This is like a grandiose scale "get out of here" sort of thing.
Well, it's funny because I think Idzik, he had, what was it, like 12 draft picks his first year,
and he fumbled all of them.
He screwed up every single pick, and to me, the ultimate is the Jet. It never fails. They always think that they're smarter than every other franchise when it comes to quarterbacks. Oh, Geno Smith has first round talent.
Oh, don't even
go
there.
A reason why he fell to the second round.
Don't even go there.
Oh, the clown that they drafted from Penn State, Hackenberg.
Christian Hackenberg.
The guy's not even in the league. He was only drafted 2 years ago.
Mikey Mack actually finally acknowledged the obvious, is that was a terrible pick.
Well, but that's the thing. It's you don't draft, and the Jets are notorious. It goes back to Ken O'Brien. The Jets are notorious for drafting quarterbacks that stink, that fall because they stink. You know what's funny, though? The Jets drafted Jeff Blake and never played him. Then he went to Cincinnati and became a Pro Bowler. So they've never gotten it with a quarterback outside of Joe Namath. I mean, they literally have never gotten it right in the draft. I mean, they're not Kansas City Chiefs bad when it comes to drafting quarterbacks, who I think the Chiefs are. I think they're one of only two teams in the NFL who've never had a quarterback that they drafted win a playoff game. You believe that? I think the Saints are the other. Even the Texans drafted T.J. Yates in like the seventh round, and that guy won a playoff game. But Kansas City, they won the Super Bowl with Len Dawson, but he was drafted by the Cowboys.
Yeah, it's been solid decades since we've talked about a quarterback in New York with the Jets that's been anywhere near all-pro worthy, or, you know, putting up numbers that you're saying to yourself, oh, yeah, this is a big-time NFL quarterback, because, you know, he's out there slinging it around, and he's throwing for 3-4 touchdowns a game and, you know, 300-plus yards. It really hasn't been the case.
Well, and it's not just the Jets. I mean, yeah, the Giants, they hit the home run on Eli where they, you know, but There's a lot of people who would say, look, if Eli doesn't win those two Super Bowls, he's probably not a Hall of Fame quarterback. The fact that they did win those two Super Bowls and Eli Manning played amazing in both of those playoff runs, but the Giants haven't been a consistent playoff team. They make it like once every 5 or 6 years, and then they win the Super Bowl.
But people are saying that Eli Manning shouldn't even be in the Super Bowl, even with the two Super Bowls.
Yeah, they wanted to run him out of town.
I don't understand that.
So you have to go back to Joe Namath in the late 60s to find a quarterback who was everything that epitomized playing in New York. Namath was that guy, Broadway Joe. But Phil Simms wasn't that guy. He was a mild-mannered guy from, where was he from, Tennessee?
Kentucky.
Yeah. You know, Jeff Hostetler, he was a backup, and Oakland Raiders or L.A. Raiders paid him a lot of money for winning a Super Bowl with an amazing defense. You know, he came in and basically was the Dennis Eckersley of that year for the Giants. But neither team in New York has ever really had that quarterback outside of Joe Namath, where he's flash and substance, and people are like, wow, this guy is bigger than the game. And, you know, the Giants, I have a lot of friends who are Giants fans, and I like Saquon Barkley. I think he's going to be a great pro. But I'm not ready to place all my eggs in that basket just yet, because it seems like the Giants fans, they think they're winning the Super Bowl.
So does Vegas. Vegas, the odds increased, too.
Yeah, Mags and I were talking about this before the show, Danielle. Here in Vegas, it started out, and I heard an actual segment interview earlier today with one of the handicappers here in town. And, Mags, you mentioned it was 70-1. He was talking, it started out at 80-1, the Giants to win the Super Bowl.
When I was here
and it's been gradually going down, like 50-1, 40-1, 30-1. People are hammering, and I just got a text from our friend on the weekends here on Fox Sports Radio, Tommy Barton from Tom Barton Sports, who was talking to me about the books in Delaware and in Jersey at the Borgata, saying people are blasting the sports book, hitting hard on the Giants to win the Super Bowl. Look, I get it. You're pumped up because you got the number, a guy who could be, you know, an unprecedented star at the running back position in Saquon Barkley, okay? But, and you're bringing in a new head coach, and you got it's a newfound enthusiasm with the Giants, I guess you would call it. But Super Bowl, and I'm someone who lives in Vegas, so I understand the whole value thing, but to win the Super Bowl, I mean, I really don't see how, if we're going to go that far.
I don't know, because you got Odell Beckham Jr. back. Not only that, you're adding Saquon Barkley to a lineup of guys that, you look at Odell Beckham Jr., the most electrifying receiver. And people, he's polarizing. He's like A-Rod. Either you hate him or you love him. I happen to like him. I mean, I think he's grown and matured. But his talent level, you can't dispute that. The guy is talented. Okay, he's got quick feet, and I've seen it. And you know, you add him to the mix, back into the mix. You got Evan Ingram. You have Sterling Shepard. You have Saquon Barkley. The problem with the Giants is not going to be able to put the points on the board. It's going to be keeping them off the board, because when you look at that defense, Eli Apple is a huge question mark. Of, you know, he's got some family issues that were going on. He was his first year, he was a shutdown corner. I loved him. Then he had those family issues, and he just had like an absolute terrible year. So when you and then you got Janoris Jenkins with that murder that at his house in Fairlawn.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Here,
I'm going to counter all the good things that you said about the Giants' offense, and I'm going to destroy that with two words: Eric Flowers.
Eric Flowers has been moved. Oh, that's another thing. Good thing you brought that up. See, the Giants' offensive line, which I've been hammering for years, and with you years ago.
Yes.
I call them Swiss cheese. And 80% of that offensive line is changed this year. They moved Eric Flowers to the right side. They brought in Nate Solder from the Patriots, who has protected Tom Brady, the Golden Boy's blind side, for years.
Yes, but like most Patriots, once they leave that system, and the jury will be out on Jimmy Garoppolo, although I think we got a pretty decent sample size last year, but now there's going to be film on Jimmy G, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But I remember Logan Mankins when he was with the Patriots, and he was a great lineman, left tackle for many, many years. They let him go, and he basically became irrelevant. And, you know, that's always the question mark, I think, with Patriot players. What is – are they the system?
Yeah.
Or are they great players? Because, I mean, you look at Wes Welker. Wes Welker left the Patriots, but then he went to play with the second-best quarterback of our generation, Peyton Manning,
that's right.
In Denver.
He went to the Broncos.
But a lot of those guys don't have a lot of success when they leave New England. And I think there's something to that. You know, and it's not just players. It's coaches, too.
And I'll play Captain Obvious right now, as well as Devil's Advocate with you
two. Oh, two roles.
And point out something like this, where I believe the Giants play in the NFC East, right?
Yes.
And I believe the Super Bowl champion is the Philadelphia Eagles that play in the same division, as well as what Mags and I were talking about before the show, the Dallas Cowboys are probably better than the Giants right now, too.
I think the Cowboys, they won't have the distraction of the Zeke Elliott stuff to carry them through the season. Now, there's the other distraction, which we could probably get into after the break, and that's Jerry Jones and his stance on a couple of things, because I do think that that's going to be an issue going forward unless he changes his tone, because Dak Prescott's now involved. You've got players from other teams making comments about Jerry Jones. I think Richard Sherman called it a plantation mentality that Jerry Jones has. So, you know, will that be the distraction for the Cowboys? I mean, the bottom line is Dallas is not going to – they're not good enough to win the Super Bowl. I don't think they're good enough to overcome the Eagles. But they're not to be discounted, because what are they – they went, what, 13-3 just 2 years ago? Dak's rookie year. So they're going to be good. And the question will be just how much of a distraction is Jerry Jones?
Much more on the way after the break. Daniel McCartan joining us here live in studio. It's a TC Martin show. Follow her at Coach McCartan on Twitter. Follow Magnum at Magnum702 on Twitter. Myself at Christian Wynn and TC Martin at TC Martin 21. We'll get into a couple more topics and much more as we continue on your Tuesday here at Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. TC Martin Show on a Tuesday. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. I'm Chris Wynn, along with Chris Magnum Chapman. In for TC. He'll be back tomorrow, so he'll be able to tell you some stories of the road, as he had a nice little 3-4 day break. WNBA All-Star Game was this past weekend up in Minnesota, as a couple of Las Vegas Aces star got into the mix. Mags and Danielle.
Yeah, we talked yesterday. Asia Wilson, I keep saying it, she is going to be a dominant player in this league, and I think the Aces are very, very lucky to have her. You know, sometimes when you're bad for a long time, like the San Antonio Stars were, at some point you're going to make the right decision and draft some good players, and they've got a good young nucleus. They've got Asia Wilson, of course, who was the number one overall pick this year. Kelsey Plum, who was the number one overall pick last year. Then they have Mariah Jefferson, who I think was the second overall pick just a couple years ago, if I'm not mistaken. So
Kayla McBride.
And, of course, Kayla McBride, great player out of Notre Dame. So there's a pretty good team. I mean, the funny thing is, I went to the game a couple nights ago, when the last home game before the All-Star break, and Nia Coffey, who is a great player in this league in the WNBA for a long time, she's like the sixth or seventh person on the team now.
Yeah.
So you're starting to see the effect of Bill Laimbeer, who is a guy who has, well, you know, because he was with the Liberty.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy who has won in this league. He's a guy who gets a lot out. You know, we were talking in the break about Todd Bowles gets a lot out of his players. Bill Laimbeer gets a lot out of his players. And, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't know a ton about the WNBA until this season. I started watching it a little more closely. It's exciting basketball. The games are close. There's some bad teams. The Indiana Fever are terrible. Chicago Sky are terrible. But
fundamentally sound. You know, when you watch an NBA game, you're looking at these guys traveling, double trip, and they don't call it. And I've talked to, he's not with the Knicks anymore, but Kyle O'Quinn, like recently, like within the past month. And he was like, yeah, you know, like the women, they play a much tighter game, more fundamentally sound. And if you're looking for real basketball, you look at the college, obviously March Madness, I always like to watch. And I like to watch the WNBA because of it's real basketball. It's fundamental. I like it.
And it's intense. It's not like, you know, I think a lot of people who've never watched it, maybe they get the wrong impression from women's sports. But, like, these girls play hard. Like, they don't take plays off. You don't see a lot of the, you know, you don't see a lot of trash talk.
You know, water bottle flips on the sidelines.
Yeah, you know, and they play hard, they play the right way, and they play for the right reasons, because let's be honest, none of them are making millions and millions of dollars, and that's an issue that some of the players have brought up, that, you know, maybe they're not making, and it's not like, you know, because Asia Wilson got a lot of people, I think they took it the wrong way, where she made the comment about, you know, the pay in the WNBA. And she's not saying that WNBA players need to make LeBron James money. She's not even saying that WNBA players need to make seventh guy on the LA Clippers money. What she's saying is there needs to be a higher percentage of the pie going to the players than what currently is taking place. And I can't, the thing is, I don't disagree with any player in any sport or anyone in any profession who wants to make more money, right? Like, we don't get on the garbage man who leaves garbage company A to go to garbage company B after 10 years because he wants to make more money, right? We don't get on the lawyer. Like, my lawyer, he left his law firm and went to a different one because he was going to make more money. So we don't get on people in other professions for wanting to make more money. Nobody says a word about Tom Cruise making $30 million for Mission Impossible, but yet the gaffer is only making like $60,000,
$70,000. And to provide a backstory on this, of course, we're talking about the situation with the WNBA players. And I believe it was Damian Lillard, right, from the Portland Trailblazers, who brought up how he was not happy with the amount of money that WNBA players are making and thinks that they should be making, the professional women's basketball players should be making more money. And people on both sides started coming out and forming their opinion regarding this. And it was probably a couple weeks ago, right, was when this initially started out and was being talked about. And so, it, obviously, as Mags mentioned, Asia Wilson and some other WNBA players as well, too, have chimed in with their opinion regarding this.
See, I'll give my two cents here in talking with some of the players from the Liberty, mm-hmm. from, you know, a bunch of the players. And doing my work that I do with Princeton women's basketball, sideline yeah. reporting with them. This I'll be doing my second year this year. But, you know, I just feel that these women play professional sports. They are professional athletes. They shouldn't have to go. And I'm not talking about the stars of the league. I'm talking about, you know, the third, fourth, fifth women on the team. They shouldn't have to go abroad to the Ukraine to play basketball in the off season for $15,000-$20,000. That shouldn't have to be, because the wear and tear on the body that will truncate their career, you know, overall, they shouldn't have to do that. They're playing in the WNBA. When you look at these contracts of the NBA, it's sickening. And I know that there's not as much revenue in the WNBA. There's not as much jerseys. I get that. But it needs to change.
And yeah, it's not like I think this is kind of what's clouding and muddying the waters a little bit, is like people hear an NBA player say that and they immediately think, oh, he thinks that these WNBA players should be making $2-3 million a year.
No.
That's not what I think he's suggesting.
No, and I don't
he's
think any of the
players.
He's
suggesting that there should be, you know, yeah, these players, but they can make, you know, $250,000 to $300,000 to $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
You understand? Where they, as Danielle just pointed out, and by the way, we're joined live in studio by Danielle McCartan. She is she just pointed out, sideline reporter with Princeton Women's Basketball. She's a multimedia journalist.
Go Tigers.
Hosts a 60-minute overtime podcast, which is great, and also a sub-host on WFAN. We're talking some WNBA basketball. And like, look, this isn't like the people that are for this are advocating that the WNBA players should all be multimillionaires and be getting paid ridiculous amounts of money.
No.
Because we all understand there is a difference between the market value of, say, the NBA and the WNBA.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody that's rational understands that. But I think what his contention was, and what a lot of people that are on the same end of the boat that he is on this, is that there needs to be a fair structure regarding revenue, income, and equality. And as far as the players should be getting a bigger piece of the pie than they are getting right now currently in the WNBA.
Yeah, I think it's only like, what, 8% of the revenue that goes to player salaries? And,
yes.
You know, what Danielle brought up, too, we had Mariah Jefferson in studio towards the beginning of the season. She played overseas, and
mm-hmm.
she got hurt.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing.
And that affects her career. Kelsey Plum was late for training camp with the Aces because she had a contract with Fenerbahce in Turkey that the team went all the way to the championship, and she was playing against someone, I can't remember, was it Kayla McBride who was playing over there as well? But two players from the Aces were playing in the Turkish League, and they both went to the championship game or the championship series. So they were late for training camp with the WNBA because they had to obviously finish their contract with the professional team overseas. I mean, I had a friend, very close friend of mine from high school, played at St. Bonaventure. She went pro, played in Italy.
I had a former student that plays at St. Bonaventure.
How about that? She played overseas in Italy, won, I think, two-time MVP of the Italian League. She's not rich. I mean, you know, you're not going to get rich playing women's basketball, but I think there should be some type of system in place to where they don't have to go play in Turkey, as you said, Ukraine, in Croatia. You know, and the funny thing is, the sports are very popular there. Like the Turkish games, anything between Galatasaray and Fenerbahce, it doesn't matter if it's women's basketball, if it's handball, if it's soccer. These are two, you know, and I guess the thing is, people who don't follow international soccer or sports, it's hard for them to grasp. But like Barcelona, for example, Barcelona is not just a soccer club. They have a basketball team. That's where I think the kid from who was just drafted second overall, Doncic, right? I think he played at Barcelona. It's not just a soccer team. These are clubs that have multiple sports. Like when I lived in New Jersey, I lived in Newark. I lived in the Ironbound section, all Portuguese. There was a Sporting Lisbon club on my street in Newark. And Sporting Lisbon, I knew from soccer, but they have other sports. So, like, whenever these two teams play in any sport, it gets ugly because there's a lot of hatred between the fans of Fenerbahce and Galatasaray. But Mariah was telling us just how intense.
It's a different game. You know?
It's crazy. So, like, you run the risk of injury.
Yep.
You run the risk of something else happening to you while you're over there.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't have to compensate their salary by playing in two different leagues in the same year. It's not like they're being loaned out and they're playing for that team, which is something maybe the WNBA could explore in the future if the salaries were to where these girls don't need to basically work full seasons. Because people forget, professional athlete, you don't stop being a professional athlete when your season ends. Like the players in the Golden Knights, if anyone follows like William Karlsson on Twitter or on Instagram, you see pics of him working out in the gym. If you're playing in two leagues, it's very, very difficult to stay on top of your game and to stay in the shape that you need to be in heading into the next season.
And having the correct amount of rest and the correct amount of sleep and travel and nutrition and everything. You go to these countries, I mean, I've never been to the Ukraine, but, you know, I can't imagine their nutrition is what it is here. I mean, if someone wants to call up and say, but, you know, I just... It's not so, and I'm obviously I lean pro women's sports, obviously, because for obvious reasons, but I don't think it's that much to ask. It's not much to ask that they don't have to go and have two and three in jobs when they are professional athletes. You don't see guys in any, men in any sport having to go supplement their income overseas.
And the other thing is, a lot of people don't know, the WNBA doesn't allow charter flights. When they get on the plane, they're on the plane with you and me. You know, there's a lot of men's college basketball and football programs, amateurs, in quotes, like University of Kentucky. Guess what? They get when they play in Vegas, they get on a chartered flight and they fly all the way to Vegas to play that game. Then they get on a chartered flight and head home when they're done. WNBA, they may have to make a stop in Minneapolis or Dallas, right? If you're playing, I mean, obviously Phoenix, you're getting a nonstop flight, right? Southwest Airlines, no problem, but when the Aces are playing the Indiana Fever, who knows? Maybe they have to switch planes in Chicago. Maybe they have to switch in Detroit. That's not right either.
Maybe I'm just kind of, you know, nitpicking here, but why the teams that are affiliated with NBA teams, why aren't they just taking using their team planes?
Because it's in the interest of fairness. The MGM wanted to charter the flight for the Aces because obviously they own the team.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to provide, but the WNBA stepped in and said, no, that's an advantage that all these other teams don't have. So like when the Liberty play, they have to fly commercial. They don't get the special, I was going to say the Liberty of getting on a charter flight, no pun intended. But, you know, the Washington Mystics or whoever, right? They don't get to just get on a plane at whatever time they want. They have to fly. I mean, we had Kayla McBride on the other day. She was at the airport.
I'm surprised that this is even an issue, though. Like, this isn't the NCAA or the Little League World Series. We're not talking about amateurs here. It's professionals. It's like, you know, it's all everybody for themselves is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So why would they, you know, I mean, like, you're saying it's an issue of fairness. Like, yeah. this isn't American Legion or something.
UNLV basketball, they play Fresno. Guess what? They get on a bus. Yeah. Even though you could fly nonstop to Fresno, they're getting on a bus. You know, so that's amateur athletics. That's the way. If you want to level the playing field, you do it in amateur athletics. You shouldn't do it at the professional level. It's like with baseball. You know, we're not talking about revenue sharing and all that in the interest of parity. In baseball, there is none of that. The Baltimore Orioles are going to lose 120 games because they suck. Not because it's not fair, yeah. Right? The Royals won the World Series just a couple years ago. Playing the worst style of baseball, they had no big bombers, right? They'd bunt, they'd get on base, they'd steal.
That's not the worst.
No, but you know what I'm saying, right? Like, they didn't have a guy like Aaron Judge who was going to hit 50 home runs. They didn't have that guy. They played small ball. They got into this, and if they had a lead in the sixth inning, it was over because they had two of the best middle relievers in all of baseball, and they had a great closer. But they won because they outsmarted other teams. They didn't have the built-in revenue advantage that the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Giants, the Dodgers, those teams have. But that's the way it should be. I mean, I'm all for revenue sharing because I like parity. It works great in the NHL. It doesn't work in the NBA because guys have figured out ways to circumvent all that.
Can't watch it.
And then there's a luxury tax. Oh, guess what? We're over. Boom. Too bad. Right? But like the NHL, it's a hard cap. If you're not at that $79 million, you're over. Guess what? You have to cut someone. You have to make moves to get under. And that's, if you're going to have a salary cap, that's the way it should be.
Yep. But you understand my point, right, Mags, is that, look, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
I understand the salary caps and all that. I'm talking about just travel arrangements,
though.
You're talking about, you know, from Major League, the movie, where they're flying in that, you know, that 1952 double-propeller, you know, beat-up airplane, you know. And I'm sure there's, you know, the Yankees were probably flying in a private jet. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying, though? That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah.
Is that, we're boiling it down to that, where we're talking about travel arrangements for teams and it's giving them an unfair advantage. I just don't see it.
I agree. Look, you know what? If the MGM wants to put their team on a charter flight, then so be it. That's their team. They should be able to do that. And you know what? If the WNBA has a problem with that, then maybe the WNBA needs to put pressure on the NBA to provide a little more.
That's what I'm saying, yep.
To allow these teams to be able to not have to. Look, I had a friend who ran track at Georgetown. They flew commercial, right? Track team flies commercial. Professional team, regardless of if it's men or women, they should not be flying commercial.
Matt, that's Chris Magnum Chapman. I'm Chris Wynn in for T.C. Martin. We're joined live in studio by Danielle McCartan here on the T.C. Martin Show on your Tuesday. Want to switch gears here to Major League Baseball, Danielle, since we have you in here. And there's been so many deals been going down with the Major League trade deadline going down today.
Yeah.
And especially there in New York with the teams there. The Yankees, of course, made the deal earlier last week to add J.A. Happ to the mix. He went to a local hospital today, by the way.
Hand,
foot, and mouth disease.
Well, that happened to Syndergaard.
What's
up with this hand, foot, and mouth disease coming
there.
Up all over the place?
I saw that
on Facebook. There's kids now getting it, too.
A couple athletes have been getting this.
Yeah.
I've never really seen a whole lot of this. Isn't this something that usually inflicts kids that are under 5 years old?
Well, it happens a lot in the U.K. At least it used to. They, you know, foot and mouth disease. I used to travel a lot to the U.K., and you would have to, when you came through the airport, you'd land. Before you went into customs, you'd have to walk on this mat that was like soaked in ammonia or pneumonia. Ammonia. What am I thinking?
Pneumonia's pretty bad.
They both suck, let's be honest, right? Yes. Walking on a mat that's saturated with ammonia and getting pneumonia, they both suck. But, you know, that was an effort to prevent this from spreading. And I don't know where it comes from. I think it comes from cows, if I'm not mistaken, right? It comes from a beef. I have no idea, but... It's a weird thing that this foot and mouth, and if you saw pictures of like Syndergaard, it was pretty gnarly looking.
So Danielle Cashman says it doesn't appear that Happ's going to end up being on the DL because of this, and he's not scheduled to start till Saturday against the Red Sox up in Boston at Fenway. If he's not able to return, they got options. They just picked up Lance Lynn from Minnesota. in that pitching staff there. We all know it's the Yankees, and right now they're in this basically dogfight with the Boston Red Sox at the top of the American League East Division. But how pumped and how excited are Yankee fans there back in New York, given what is about to transpire here in the next 40-plus games of this stretch run?
It's going to be a wild ride, because every time the Yankees win a game, you look up at the scoreboard, and the Red Sox have won a game, too. The last I checked, it was a 5-game difference. I mean, the thing is, in the AL East, in the AL, yeah, in the American League, you have three teams, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Astros, that are going to win, going to, on par to win over 100 games this season, which is, the last time I looked it up, the last time that happened has been like years ago, that three teams have gone that, you know, that far and that good. And it kind of comes down to that one game wild card playoff game. And at this point, it's going to be the Yankees versus the Astros. And that worries a lot of Yankees fans. I mean,
the memory is short, because we all know what went down in the postseason a year ago. So that's understandable, I guess.
It's a bad position to be in, because you've won all these games where you can just go into the NL, and that could be the World Series, Red Sox, Yankees, if they were in the NL, but they're not. But people are excited. People are a little bummed about Aaron Judge's injury. The pitcher that threw the ball at him and caused the wrist bone bruise, bone break or whatever, chip, he has said that he has heard it from Yankees fans on social media. And people are just excited. I think I was on with you, and I said it was going to be home run derby over there at Yankee Stadium. And it has. And they're on pace, I think, still to hit the most home runs ever in an MLB season.
Dana McCartan is joining us here live in studio. Chris Magnum Chapman, Chris Wint in for T.C. Martin. We'll close things out and finish it up on the other side of the break here. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Stick around.
Pace.
Get the CG Technology mobile app and bet with the convenience of your phone. Open your account today by simply going to one of the fantastic CG sports books and sign up and make a deposit. No more waiting in line and trying to find parking. Visit the state-of-the-art CG sports books at the M, Silverton, Palms Hard Rock, Tropicana Venetian, Palazzo, and the Cosmopolitan. It's betting made easy with the CG Technology mobile app. Chris Wynn, Chris Magnum Chapman, in live for the Dr. T.C. Martin on the T.C. Martin Show, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Daniel McCartan joining us here live in studio, visiting us from the right coast over there in the New York, New Jersey, tri-state area. She does a great job covering Princeton Lady Tigers basketball, as well as, of course, her great overtime podcast, as well as filling in over on WFAN. We're talking all things sports in New York, Danielle. And, of course, a big decision came down today regarding sponsorships in the NBA and WNBA. MGM Resorts is going to be the first major sponsor from a gaming perspective that's going to be sponsoring a major sport. It's always been kind of that deal with the NBA especially ever since David Stern retired, basically, and Adam Silver took over, where there's much more an acceptance, I think, of Vegas in the sporting world.
He's Adam Silver. He's a very forward-thinking guy, from what I've seen. And I went to a press conference or a talk with him once. You know what? There's going to be NFL football here. I mean, it's about time. And sports betting has been legalized throughout the country. It's about time.
And it's all over the place, especially in your neck of the woods over there.
My brother and my dad are going on Saturday down to Atlantic City to...
You're someone who's not afraid to venture to Vegas, though, a lot, right?
Oh, no. No. I'll
and you
here.
Don't see any shortage of any times you coming back, right?
No, I think I'll be back in February, I think.
Yeah, so you're gonna hit up the Italian-American Social Club on your trip out here this time?
Thursday.
I was just there last week. My favorite restaurant in town.
They're listening. They're listening now, by the way.
I love that place. I was there last Wednesday. Chicken Parmesan, fantastic.
Danielle, awesome. You got a chance to come in and hang with us today.
This is great. Thanks, guys.
Follow her on Twitter at Coach McCartan. Also, catch her on her podcast, 60 Minute Overtime, which is tremendous. Chris Magnum Chapman, always great to hang with you, my friend. I'm Chris Wynn. T.C. Martin's going to be back tomorrow.